Hello, everyone. This is John Morgan. I'm hosting kind of a different style here. I'm going to do a Lookout Landing podcast because I don't know of anything quite like that. And and some of the interest is just my own personal curiosity because I'd like to get some opinions because I'm a huge Mariners fan and I haven't been able to follow the team as much as I'd like. So I contacted Matt and Jeff from Lookout Landing, and we're just going to do a few quick questions here, and just try to do this the best we can. So, Matt, Jeff, you there?
Oh, man.
Matthew.
Matthew, you do not like Matt?
I do not like Matt, no.
Okay, well, I won't call you Matt then.
hey, this is Jeff.
Okay, so, first thing, Felix Hernandez, how huge is this?
I still don't have my pants on. Figured might as well lead off with that.
Yeah, I put my pants on because I went to work, but at the start of the offseason, I was extraordinarily nervous. I think everybody was nervous because everybody realized that this is kind of the big offseason for Felix. This is the one where they had to decide what they're going to do with him because it doesn't make sense to keep him, for half a year or a year after this. It reduces the return. And so I think everybody was just looking for any indication that this is going to come to pass. And then, there was nothing. There were some rumors flying around about a month ago about a low first offer, and everybody was issuing denials. And then for this to happen the way it did, if you were on Lookout Landing, you saw the reaction. There is not a single person on the planet who is disappointed by this unless they root for the Red Sox or the Yankees.
I know personally, Felix was such a phenom prospect that it was like an appointment viewing to see his first start. So, even if perhaps the Mariners could have gotten good value for him in a trade, I didn't want to see him leave just because I felt so attached to him.
Right. Yeah, it's been the first pitcher, I guess you would say, since Randy, really, that has had that kind of following in Seattle. I guess Freddie had that a little bit, but not really.
I don't know about Freddie. Freddie was never really a dominant kind of guy. It was a pitch of the defense
no,
kind of guy more than anything.
Right, but he was kind of a figurehead of our good spell from 2000 to 2003. And
yeah, I remember everybody.
But he was also really messed up in the head, so I don't think anybody was sad to see him go.
And he was Felix's idol. Funny how that worked out.
Right.
Speaking of Felix, one of the questions I have is that, in traditional stats, he seemed to be a much better pitcher last year. Is that something that actually bears true when you look at his advanced stats?
Yes.
Yeah.
His ground balls have steadily declined since he burst onto the scene in 2005, which has basically been the only complaint I've had, aside from the fastballs, the obvious typing of fastballs to start the game. But everything else has gotten a lot better. His swinging strikeout rate was the highest of his career. His walk rate was down. His strikeout rate was up. It's kind of hard to pick anything to complain about, really.
Yeah, his superficial stats were elevated, but his sabermetric stats were elevated, too. You could see, if you want to go subjective, he was a more mature pitcher. He didn't let things rattle him the way they used to. Like that one game in Toronto, I think, a couple of years ago, where he got really flustered by a bad inning, and everybody was, that's all anyone was talking about. So his maturity got better. But then, after all the years of yelling at him to quit throwing all these fastballs, he kept throwing fastballs, but he mixed them up, and his fastball got better. So this is what happened. Felix kind of did things his way, and it was frustrating. But to see him take this kind of step forward, there's no reason to believe that he's about to regress. Everything, all of his pitches now are just at their peak.
Right. I would point out again that we were never – it was always a two-pronged thing with Felix's fastball. It wasn't so much that we hated his fastball or that we didn't want him to throw his fastball. It was just that we either wanted him to learn how to command his fastball or stop throwing it in such obvious situations. We thought, mixing up the pitch selection was easier. He decided to just go with the more difficult one and make his fastball better. So whatever, it's good, so that's fine.
And I think he did. He still threw as many fastballs as ever, but I think he did, at least subjectively, mix them up a little better. There weren't those horrible first innings anymore. That's a step forward.
I don't know. Those were still there for the most part. It wasn't so much the 29 out of the first 30 anymore, which was nice, but it was still often 10 out of the first 12 sort of a thing.
Yeah, I think we had a new poster, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, and again, that's when he can command a fastball, it's just as unhittable as any of his other four pitches. So if he, I'm not going to bitch about that. If he can locate it, then fine, throw it.
Yeah.
Is his found command, is that maybe connected to his reduced velocity? Like maybe he's not, this might just be a baseball truism, but maybe he's not throwing as hard so that he can actually throw with more accuracy?
I could see that. That's hard to prove, you know, short of asking him directly. Mm-hmm. I think a chunk of that, pitchers always will lose a little velocity just from the start, from where they, when they break in. That's just how it naturally goes. They'll lose it slowly, obviously. We're not expecting Felix to lose a bunch of miles, but it does happen. And then you also have to consider that he had two fastballs. He was throwing a two-seamer and a four-seamer, the two-seamer slower. And I think it feels like he threw more of those last year than he did before. So that'll account for a chunk of it. But there is still a little drop in his velocity that, I don't know, lacking anything else, it is tempting to suggest that he was doing it on purpose. So it's definitely possible.
Okay. This could also just be a variance in, you know, radar guns. Pitch FX isn't horribly accurate stadium to stadium. We saw the issues with, boy, I can't remember the opponent, but when Felix came out and he was throwing 88-89 in the first inning and everybody had their, oh my God, he's hurt thing. And,
oh, I remember that, yeah.
You know, maybe we should just wait an inning and sometimes those things take care of themselves and as they did. So it could just be something along those lines.
Yeah.
And the last thing I really want to ask about Felix, and this ties in with his fastball a little bit, is that I've been reading that he's developed just a killer change and that it's also very fast. My two questions are, could that be being confused with the fastball, and could that somehow be making his fastball look slower? And what is it about this change that really makes it so devastating?
Well, Jeff, you're the one who looks at it a lot more than I do. So.
I'll pick this one. Felix has always had a dynamite change. You know, when he came up as a prospect, everyone is saying, oh, he has a four-seamer, a two-seamer, a curveball, a slider, and a change. They're all great pitches, and it's true, they were. His change has always been good. And what's funny is I haven't been able to get an explanation for why his changeup has gotten so fast. I know a guy, that's not important, but basically I know for a fact that there were a couple times last year when Felix would throw a changeup, and then he would turn around, look at the scoreboard, and see 89 or 90, and then he would think, what? How did that happen? You know, so what that implies is that Felix doesn't even know how it's happening, but it's happening. And while if you look at the PitchFX data, it can be really hard to separate his changeup from a two-seamer, the fact of the matter is that he does throw a really fast changeup, even if some of them are being confused. And, you know, when you throw a pitch that moves that much at 90 miles per hour, that's going to be a hard pitch to hit, you know? The results kind of speak for themselves.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Okay, so, you know, with all this Felix hoopla kind of being like the peak of the off season, it's still worth noting that this has just been a fantastic off season for the Mariners. And what Jack C started last year seems to be just continuing with force this year. And so I wanted to ask you guys a little bit about, you know, specific moves during this off season and why you think maybe he did it. And if you agree with those decisions, and eventually I'll ask you about just where this team seems to be going, if it has legitimate playoff contentions. So first thing I want to ask, and either one of you guys can answer first up to you, what was the most important single set of roster moves during this offseason?
All right, why don't we'll switch off who answers first. So Matthew, you can take this one, I'll go first next time, and that'll keep us from talking over each other.
All right. Well, we're also probably going to say the same thing anyway, so I would have to say it's the Cliff Lee trade. And I kind of wrote about this in my long post about Felix trade scenarios, obviously, before this extension. But coming into the winter, as Jeff said previously, you know, this was the kind of make or break. We need to decide what we're doing. And if the team is sacking it or, you know, not going for it strenuously this year, it didn't make a lot of sense to hold on to Felix unless you could extend him. Now, that's kind of a moot point now. But the whole trade for Cliff Lee, what that really said was, we're going for it this year. And there was no way that they weren't, that they were going to go for it this year and trade Felix. So it didn't really set in at the time because we were too busy going around saying Cliffley woo, but in retrospect, that really was the move to me that said, you know, we're keeping Felix around, we're going for it this year, and that kind of led to every other move.
Gotcha, gotcha. You say that the move is sort of a confirmation the team is really making a run this year. Is there any truth to the idea that having dominant front-end pitching is especially useful in the playoffs because of the short series?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. We're the worst.
Of course we're the same worst.
The tidbit has been thrown out about the Yankees, you know, this past offseason. They threw 78% of their innings went to, what was it, like Pettit, Sabathia, Burnett and Rivera. 48% of those innings went to those four during the regular season, 78% during the postseason. That is a truism that holds. A dominant bullpen, dominant, you know, 1, 2, 3 starters with this many off days during the postseason, their effect is magnified. The postseason really doesn't test your depth, which would be good for the Mariners because they don't have much.
Yeah. This is a team that's kind of, it's sort of, I don't know, 85, 90-win team on its face right now. But then if it does make the playoffs, you figure in a 7-game series, you can have one of these two guys start 5 out of 7 times because the series is so spread out. So, I mean, it obviously makes a big difference. We don't have to start Jason Vargas or Ian Snell in the playoffs if we don't want to.
Thank God.
That just gives us the advantage that often. I mean, we have two of the best, what, like 3, 4 pitchers in the American League. What would we be up against? We would have the advantage in every game that they pitch.
Pretty much, yeah. I think if not, it would be pretty close.
Yeah.
This team is built so that it could potentially make the playoffs, and if it does, it could make a really dominant run.
Yeah,
I think as far as a playoff team would go, you know, as Jeff said, they're maybe an 85, 86 regular season win team, but if they do get into the playoffs, they're going to act more like a 95 win team in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's sensational. I think that I speak for just about any Mariner fan to say that a World Series would be everything. Jeff, did you have a different take on, like, the big off-season move?
No, you have to go with Lee. I mean, even if you just take it from a here's what we had and here's what we have now, Lee is by far the biggest immediate upgrade. And, you know, he's probably only going to be here for 1 year, but we're only really concerned about 1 year right now. And Lee made us better by, you know, almost like 5 wins. You can't get many bigger upgrades than that, and it didn't cost us anyone really critical.
And he would be a type A free agent, right? So if the team offered him arbitration, they would be getting draft picks.
He would have to pitch all season with a Carlos Silva ERA, and he would be maybe a type B. The rankings are ridiculous the way they are, and it is a 98% guarantee that Lee is going to be a type A, which means we get 2 picks for him if he walks. And, you know, maybe he doesn't walk. We'll see. I would count on it, but it's not a guarantee.
Right. So that's the thing about Elias, their rankings, is if a player is on the DL, they give the player credit for what they would expect the player to produce were he healthy. So we kind of saw that with Adrian Beltre last year when he spent all the time on the DL and people were frantically watching whether he was going to be type A or type B, that when he was actually on the DL, it actually helped the Mariners because, according to Elias, his counting stats went up.
That's just wild, but the general manager can exploit it.
Yeah, pretty much.
So, I mean, we're looking at this team, and you guys described quite a bit about you know, its potential to contend, and also once it gets into the postseason, that they could make a run. What is going to determine, really? You know, like, and of course, is it just shooting in the dark because it's so hard to predict even one game, much less 162 games. But is there some idea you have for what would really push this team one way or the other when it comes to wins and losses.
All right. Well, right now we are, by estimates, we are probably better, maybe a win better than our closest competition in the division, which is so small that it's almost negligible. But, you know, we're at the front. So really all we need is a little good luck. And it's, you never want to say it depends on anybody, but, you know, if Milton Bradley finds his bat, that is a huge help if he stays healthy. If Jack Wilson stays healthy, maybe if he hits a little bit. There's a million different variables that it comes down to. There's a million different ways we can get into the playoffs. But we have the talent, so we really just need to play up to our expected performance, maybe a little beyond. It would be nice if Brandon Leigh would be a big help, and we just need the Angels to stop overachieving, because I think they don't have that good of a team anymore, and the Rangers seem to be still maybe a little ways off. This is a winnable division, and we don't need that much luck to take it.
Yeah, it would certainly help if Rich Harden got hurt again. That would do wonders for us.
If?
Well, significantly hurt. Not
yeah.
that I would wish that on him, but...
But nevertheless, in the spirit of fair competition, not wanting it for him, but acknowledging it. You know, when we're trying to pin down this team's projected performance, how much does the variability of defensive performance impact what we would expect from this team? Because I know this team's very much built for defense.
I think we've been pretty conservative in our defensive projections, because you never want to, you know, you don't want to say that Gutierrez is going to have another year like he had last year. That would be absurd. You know, he had historic, legendary numbers. So I think the people, the responsible people who have been doing the forecasting have been pretty good about it. I think, if anything, there's a little more upside in the defense than we've expressed, because, you know, what if Wilson stays healthy? What if he plays 140 games? Figgins is really good at third base. There could be people who fall off the map defensively, but I think the projections have been pretty fair.
That I also would say that for some of the people like Langerhans, if they fall off, or you know, Kostman, if they fall off defensively, they're not holding on to their position with their bat, so we would just replace them with somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if Langerhans hurts his quad and he pulls a Bill Hall next year, we call it Michael Saunders, you know, our defense wouldn't really struggle that much in that case. We wouldn't see much of a fall off.
Yeah, so there's strength both in, like, the front line and in the depth when it comes to defense.
Yeah, I mean,
when it comes to
defense,
with certain people, yeah.
Is there a single player that the Mariners really just absolutely cannot afford to lose? I mean, I know that, obviously, Felix and Cliff Lee, but, you know, maybe someone beyond them.
Gutierrez, Ichiro, I would say any of those big four. And that's really what I think is the interesting question about this team this year, is that the variance is just so high on what they could do, because most of the team is kind of old. We don't have anybody in the minor leagues that could step up and be a sudden impact star. We don't have an Adam Jones that could blossom overnight. Michael Saunders is kind of the best we have there, but even then, realistically, you're looking at a guy who reaches his potential of hitting like Randy Winn and fielding like Randy Winn. That's great, but he's not gonna carry the team on the back.
Right.
So, but on the other hand, we have people, you know, Milton Bradley 2 years ago was a 5-win player. Gutierrez, Ichiro last year were 6-win players. Lee, 7-win player. Felix, 6-win player. When we project them for 2010, we have them all, you know, knocked to half of that. But they all have demonstrated the ability to be that good. We know they have that talent. So this could be a team where if everything went right, this team could win over 100 games. If Gutierrez gets hurt and, you know, Lee and Felix regress and Milton Bradley gets hurt or ejected or knights a guy, it could be a team that wins 75 games because there's just nobody behind them to step up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
To answer your specific question, but, you know, behind Gutierrez and Ichiro, we have Saunders, so that's something. Behind Felix and Lee, the rotation drops off in a hurry, and there's There's no hotshot prospect coming up through AA or AAA. So really, either an injury to either one of those two would be the most devastating, because there is so little potential to be able to make up for that internally.
Speaking of potential, you know, when and this might just be my innate sense of fanboy, but when I look at a guy like Felix, who had such a good season last year and is considered to have once-in-a-generation talent, is there still upside within this guy? Could he this year become a 7 or 8 win pitcher?
I think so. If his fastball command stays and he takes the next step and does start mixing up his pitches a little bit more, I think that is a small step of improvement that he could take. If he, you know, as much as I love his changeup, if he regains that feel for the 85-mile-an-hour changeup instead of the 90-mile-an-hour changeup, that makes his fastball just that much more devastating, because now there's a 8 or 9 mile-an-hour gap between the two instead of a 4 mile-an-hour gap. So I think there's room for improvement from Felix, I think, but that's, I mean,
I just remember the guy more or less being, you know, talked up as, even back when he was 18, which is, shoot, I mean, I guess that wasn't that long ago, you know, it's just having just stuff that was almost unseen, and the combination of plus pitches. And, you know, and while he was, you know, a special pitcher last year, he wasn't necessarily the best pitcher in the league. And it seems like that is his potential. And so, I mean, again, maybe it's just a fanboy thing, but it seems like once you start to see a guy making steps in that direction, it seems like good things can happen almost beyond your expectations.
Well, you always want a guy with talent to get better. You know, everybody wants a pitcher to be the best pitcher in the world. If you look at the best pitchers in baseball, like the absolute best, they'll all have something in common. It's that they don't walk that many guys. Felix is never going to have that kind of command. When you throw that hard with that many different pitches and that much movement, it's just about impossible to take his walks down very far. So really, if he doesn't bring down his walks much, strikeouts stay about the same, maybe get a little better. You just want to see him generate a few more ground balls. Maybe that comes from mixing up his pitches, maybe slowing down his changeup, throwing more two-seamers, whatever. I would think ground balls are his easiest way of improving. But, you know, if he never gets better from where he is now, I think I'll take it. That'll make me happy.
True.
Right.
True.
I would say Felix is, because of his pitching profile, he's always going to be slightly, I guess, I hesitate to use this word, but slightly unimpressive for how good he is. The way he dominates is through efficient ground balls, and that's just not that sexy. You know, I talked about it a little bit when I wrote about Randy Johnson, that was the difference between the two. Randy Johnson, you never knew when he was going to come in and strike out 18 people, and he would do that twice a year. Felix isn't really going to have those games. Felix is going to dominate the way Roy Halladay dominates, and that's great, don't get me wrong, but it's different.
Yeah, I think it actually makes for exciting baseball, but I'm probably one of the few people who actually likes a fast game with lots of defense rather than a lot of long balls.
Are you kidding? Have you talked to us before?
You know, no, I haven't.
Oh, good point.
Okay, so, you know, kind of final question. This is you know, a chance to kind of talk about something that is a little less focused. You know, what I'm really curious about is there some sort of talent within the system, or a player already on the team, or, you know, just any sort of asset or position, or even person within the organizational structure that is, you know, that deserves more attention and could potentially be like an exciting asset in the future for the Mariners?
I guess I'll go. I would say the bullpen as a whole, and Brandon League in particular. I wrote about it when we first traded for him, about his newfound splitter and how he just, out of nowhere, he'd never thrown this pitch before. He starts throwing it in 2009, and it generates the most swings and misses as a percentage of any pitch in baseball that anybody threw. That's insane. That's just, I don't even know how to describe that. That's, you know, he'd never thrown a pitch before, and all of a sudden, it's the best pitch in baseball.
Mm-hmm.
That's
Yeah,
I have no adjectives for that, but really, we talked a lot about last year about the bullpen. You know, they led the league in ERA for a while, but we knew the whole time that they were succeeding on a lot of luck, a lot of fly balls to the warning track. They were walking a lot of people. They were striking out a lot of people. They were living by the defense and some luck on balls in play. And 2010 is a different year. And what we have, Mark Lowe was above average. David Arsman was above average. Sean Kelly was above average. Brandon League was above average. That's four guys, four hard-throwing right-handers out of a, you know, six- or seven-man bullpen already. I do think there's a lot of upside in this bullpen. Granted, relievers are very variable, but that could be a unit that actually earns its praise this coming year rather than last year.
All right, so Matthew took my guy. I was going to say Brandon League because, of course that happens. But I guess press, I would say player. I think Michael Saunders deserves a little more respect. People have been a little quick to jump on him after his debut last year, but then I guess that doesn't really factor into 2010 very much. He's probably not going to have a huge role. But you mentioned somebody in the organization, maybe even an executive, and just going over old Felix articles today reminded me that I think everybody should take a minute today to thank whoever they like to thank, that we have Bob Engel on our side, because his ability to scout international talent has paid off in ways I can't even begin to describe. The Mariners aren't the biggest budget team in baseball. They're not the most aggressive team in baseball, but in Latin America, they have a presence that is pretty much unparalleled by any other organization, and that's in large part Engel's doings. And we just signed this kid out of El Salvador yesterday. Who knows anything about him? But because Bob Engel scouted him, you know, that's a plus. There's a reason
to get excited by itself, huh?
Yeah.
I guess I'd even throw in another one. I would say Jack Wilson maybe deserves a little bit more respect, or I don't know, hope. You know, this was a guy who everybody just seems bummed out that he signed, that he's still here. There's a lot of talk. Oh, well, what about Josh Wilson? Can we use Jack Hanahan? Can we use Sean Figgins at shortstop? You know, Jack Wilson's pretty good, and he's not making a lot of money. And this is a guy who, his hitting's fallen off, but the last 3 years he's been 2.5 wins, 1.5 win, 2 win guy. And that's, I mean, who knows? Maybe he gets a little bit better with the stick, a full year in the AL. If he gets healthy, who knows the extent that his injuries have been playing in his offensive woes. And at the very least, you know what? He's not uni. Let's lay off Jack Wilson for a while. I know he's ugly, but he's not uni.
What a journey that was. I remember when Betancourt was such a hotshot prospect that, you know, reason to be excited just to watch him play.
Uni, he didn't put any work in. But I wanted to add to Matthew's Jack Wilson point, you know, when you see Zurencic make additions like Franco Gutierrez or Cliff Lee or Sean Figgins, you're always thinking, well, what can he do? You know, everybody wanted Adrian Gonzalez. Everybody was disappointed when we got Casey Kostman because everyone was thinking Z can get Adrian Gonzalez. They wanted him to do pull off these magical moves that you just can't do that often. And if you look at Jack Wilson, he's a shortstop. There's not a whole lot of quality shortstops out there. I mean, the Royals have Yunieski Betancourt starting every day. Jack Wilson is the best defensive shortstop in baseball. Everybody seems to agree with that. Everybody that matters, anyway. I don't care what idiots have to say. he's important, obviously.
Derek Jeter.
Demonstrates Derek Jeter is second best, but number one. And he doesn't hit. Whatever. He doesn't have to hit to be valuable. People have to remember that. Even after last year, people still aren't comfortable with defense-first players. I don't know why.
Maybe it's just because they skim the box score and defense stats don't show.
Yeah.
So that would be my only guess.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's more or less what I was looking for. You guys kicked ass, in my opinion. I hope to post this up. Thanks, you guys. Do you guys have anything else?
I'm all set.
No, I'm good.
Okay, thank you so much for taking the time.
Yeah, I'm good. Thank you.
Yeah, perfect.
All right, have a good night.